Fatherhood, fatherlessness, single parenting, co-parenting, we've got it all on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes, as always, those are my babies. Thanks for getting daddy started today. Mwah. Welcome to Frank Relationships. Today's guest is a relationship expert, life coach, husband, and father of three. He's also the best-selling author of the book, Tame Your Woman, Be the Man She Needs You to Be. And along with his wife, Kenya, the formulator of the Progressive Love Movement. He's also the co-founder of JujuMama.com. He's Carl Stevens. He's also a past guest, and you can listen to his show at your leisure at franklove.com by searching for his name as the keyword. That's Carl with a C. We're also joined by a brother that witnessed his mother's struggles as a single parent. So, why is he focused on supporting low-income fathers? Because when he thought about his father, he took an unexpected approach. He says, I thought about the things he was going through that prevented him from remaining active in my life. And what if someone had been there to help him? He believes that might have made a tremendous difference for his dad. He's the CEO and founder of Fathers Uplift, Inc. He's Charles Daniels. And finally, we have a therapist that has rendered mental health and substance abuse disorder services to individuals and groups for over 25 years. She notes that she's been truly blessed to understand that emotional hurdles can affect cognitive functioning and related behaviors, and that the therapeutic session is a wonderful opportunity for the client to increase their insights into problematic feelings and situations while developing new coping mechanisms. She is a mother and licensed clinical professional counselor. She is Miss Loretta Elizadel. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on, Frank.
Why are uncles important to the raising of children? Carl, you recently wrote a blog talking about the importance of community in the raising of children, and I have, in my own way, I've recently had a conversation about uncles and community in the raising of children. So I figure I'll punt that one to you.
Well, you know, it's important for children to be exposed to a number of different ideas and character traits and things of that nature. It's like the African proverb, it takes a village. So you really need, as a child, you need to be exposed to a number of things. You need a number of adults in your life to show you what it can be to be a man, what it can be to be a father, what it can be to be a woman, etc. And so the only way you get that is through being exposed to a number of adults who actually love and care for you and have a vested interest in your upbringing. And so whether you come from a single-parent household or you come from a two-parent household is irrelevant. It's still important for children to have other adults in their life that they can talk to and lean on and leverage and be exposed to. And the basis of the blog that I wrote was basically saying that just because you're a single mother or you're a single father, that doesn't mean that your child can't grow up having the experience of having healthy mother-like or aunt-like or healthy father-like or uncle-like exposure, which can ultimately help that child to have a complete holistic upbringing. And so I was trying to give some insight to single parents primarily, but also married couples, that this is a very important element that everyone should have.
What are some of the ways to support our brothers in becoming better fathers? That's for you, Charles.
Well, I think when I think about fathers who are not present physically and fathers who are present physically but emotionally absent, I think about one thing that we have to be careful of is the definitions that we expect them to uphold in our lives. See, there's a stigma that's connected to what it is a man should be, what he has to do in order to be adequate and worthy. And how we conduct ourselves and live up to those definitions, right, could destroy relationships or help relationships, primarily one's relationship with themselves. So if I believe that I have to be a provider, I have to have all this money to be adequate, 9 times out of 10, if I don't have that money, I don't feel adequate, and I'm not going to be present. So sometimes we've got to give men their own authority to create their definition without us placing definitions on them. Right? How can we value a father for being who he is without thinking about the things that he can do for someone else? And I think that's a difficult thing to do. But at the end of the day, we have to be able to see a man's worth for who he is as a person instead of what he can do. And I think oftentimes those two are connected with one another, particularly when you look at society, those images that are portrayed. You have to have money, you have to have cars, you have to have a nice girl, you have to have a nice house. If you don't have none of those things, you can't be worth anything. And we got to make sure we challenge those definitions daily. So that's our main thing here. We challenge definitions that society placed on us and our families and begin to create new definitions that we could learn how to thrive off of, value ourselves without the possessions that we own. That's the first thing.
Loretta, why is it best if, and this is assuming that you might even agree, but why is it best that some fathers are not in the life, the direct life of their children? Or shall we say, or is it?
Okay, I believe that it also has been evidence-based that fathers that are there and on a consistent basis do bring an element, even if some of their practices are not in line with what we have defined the role model for our fathers to be. And I say society at large. I'm not saying we as individual people who are speaking on this program. But I also see that individuals who have an absence of this type of role in their lives are always seeking it out, and they may be seeking it out through other means. We become impacted by the elements in our environment. And so even if someone is a distant father, and I'm going to use the role of someone who may be incarcerated or someone who may be in another relationship, okay?
How about can we use the role, because incarceration is kind of, you know, some could say it's involuntary. There could be a case made against that. But the how about we use the example of someone who's really deep into street life?
But not necessarily incarcerated?
But not necessarily incarcerated.
So you're saying they're not incarcerated, but they're not there. They're absent emotionally.
Yes, they're absent emotionally.
So they're really not, right, they're not interacting with the development of the child. They're not investing in the development of the child.
Right.
Yes, but it's because they may even consider themselves to be a bad example, or they may figure that they would be putting their child's life in jeopardy if they were in close contact with their children, something of that nature.
Okay. So in other words, you're saying their lifestyle does not so they have identified themselves as a biological portion of this child, but they're not interacting with this child.
Yes.
Okay. And you're saying that that would be best that they do stay and keep a distance?
Yes.
Because of the elements that they could bring?
Where they believe that. Or they think they just would be a bad dad. They believe that they would be a bad dad.
I'm not quite clear on that question, but I do believe that even at a distance, it's usually that their absence emotionally and their investment is just not with the family structure.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be very streetwise, and they may also practice. So that we're talking about a whole complete different belief system. So their belief system is that if they look at that child being in a capable household, and you know that they'll be reared or being taken care of by another element, we might save a village.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, being the village as an extended family. They may still not feel that they're a bad dad, especially if they're sending over financial support.
Right.
Mm. Understood.
You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
And that goes back to speaking about the cultural differences, right? So,
correct.
For example, when I think about why my father wasn't in my life, my father left at an early age, but it was because he had an outside family. See, my mom and I were the outside family. My father was married to his wife of 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, keep this in mind. If we don't understand the history and the culture of why men engage or interact the way they interact, we can't understand why the man isn't present in his child's life if he's not present the way that the family wants him to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when you think about the family in which my father grew up in, his father was a pastor. His mother was a first lady. So there was a high standards, right? The preacher's children had to be close to perfect to represent my grandfather. So at the end of the day, anything that could mess up, right, those family values that my father was raised in.
Or
right?
The facade.
The values that he was taught, right? Anything that counters that is automatically going to counter his self-esteem. And sometimes as men, what we do when we feel as if our self-esteem is being attacked, we keep a distance. Right? We say, okay, I'm not good enough as of yet to be present the way that the family wants me to be present in my child's life. However, I can do such and such to make sure that I can maintain my dignity at the same time. We think about men who may not be physically present. They love their children. Matter of fact, it hurts them as much to be away out of their kids' life. However, when it comes to maintaining their dignity and being present the way that society thinks they need to be present, 9 times out of 10, the man's going to choose how can he maintain his dignity and self-worth as a man.
Right.
For some of the women out there, we know that ego is a big thing for men,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And 9 times out of 10, it contributes to many decisions that we make. So when I think about fathers who are not physically present, I would like to say, hey, it's not because they don't want to be present. They do want to be present. But we have to understand the culture in which that father was raised if we take the time to talk to that father. At the end of the day,
okay.
We'd be able to figure out a lot of things that's going on.
I like to piggyback on that because I also believe it has a lot to do with, and I do agree with you, but I also believe that it has a lot to do with the beliefs and practices of where they come from. So even though I may be absent emotionally, the father may be absent emotionally, it's also their viewing how the practices and the beliefs of that family line or that the male portion of their family line has been introduced to them. If it's okay that I don't see my child for, you know, every 2 or 3 weeks, but I'm sending over financial support, that in their mind, that they're not a deadbeat dad. Okay, I'm supporting my child, and I'm allowing them to do certain things by sending over this financial. And that might be a tour procedure. That may be a learning procedure through their family, you know, their family line. So I do understand that portion of an outside family versus someone who has picked up a lifestyle that puts their family, or that child in danger. You know, I do understand that piece. Yeah.
Welcome to Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brothers, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create better parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. You can also find me on ABC's Good Morning Washington most Friday mornings during the 9 o'clock hour. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and if via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get each week's show. Also, If you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so please help us help our communities by spreading the word about this show. Greetings to my co-host, Nancy.
Frank.
The consummate generalist.
What happened to Super Duper? How did I fall from Super Duper Grace?
It's been a tough morning.
I'll let you roll back.
Greetings to my Super Duper co-host, Nancy
you.
Goldray.
Hi, Frank. I mean, I can't be on if you're not on.
I like it.
You know, come on.
You could carry it. You could be my right hand.
Absolutely. But okay. You got to have a right hand for me to grab.
Okay.
So your right hand is super duper.
Okay.
For future reference.
Got
of course.
You. I completely understand.
Okay. We're on now.
We're also joined by today's visiting co-host, Rehan Reed.
Hey, hey, hey.
What's up, Rehan?
What's up, brother?
Who are you and what do you do when you aren't guest co-hosting?
Let's see. I'm a father of three, 11-year-old girl, a 5-year-old boy, and a 3-year-old girl going on 4.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And I work for one of the Beltway Bandits, a federal contractor.
Okay.
And then I also spend some time working on my own small business.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Great to have you here. Yeah,
thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay. My first question for you, I really want you to take some time, you know, think about this because this is pretty deep. Why do you think that I'm a genius?
Oh my gosh, this is gonna be so easy for you, Rehan.
I think your genius is in the fact that you flip things on their head. You keep people guessing, so I think that's pretty genius.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
See, this guy can come next week too. He knows exactly.
I just want to apologize to the guests.
We may have a right and left hand.
Imagine that.
As is the case this week with Rehan, there's a visiting guest co-host chair available each week here in the studio. So if you're in the Washington, D.C. area or traveling to the D.C. area and want to join us in the studio on a given Thursday morning, email me at frank@franklove.com. Before we go further into our fatherhood piece, I need to check in to see what's new in the world of relationships. And Charles, Carl, and Loretta, we invite you to join in this conversation definitely. So this is not just between the hosts.
Right.
So, okay. Nancy, you, yes. Well, first off, and in fact, do any of you all have anything popping in the world of relationships that you want to just throw around?
That we want to throw around.
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to our guests.
I apologize. Oh. I spoke out of turn. My God. Okay.
Okay. All right. Go on, Nancy. Go on. What you got?
I have nothing to add.
That's not true. I got one.
I'm sorry. What is it?
I got one. And this is not, this is serious.
Okay.
This is rough.
Mm.
My wife has there was a sister that my wife went to school with.
Okay.
And my wife is, my wife is 10, 15 years out of college.
Okay.
And she, this woman of note, I believe she had a child, and her boyfriend and she broke up. Apparently he was seeing someone else, and this is not fact. This is just my understanding.
Okay.
He was seeing someone else. She broke off with him. He didn't want to break up. And it's suspected that he killed her.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
Showed up at her house or something like that and shot her.
Wow.
Like, this is...
That's heavy.
It's heavy. It's tragic. It's... I mean, where do... I wrote a book, How to Gracefully Exit a Relationship. This is a place to interject such information. Because when we're looking at relationships ending to take the life
of another human being
is
that you loved,
that you apparently loved,
right?
Who had, believe, a child, and who had probably parents, family.
Sure.
I mean, you're not just.
That touches a lot of lives.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Really. I mean, if you're thinking about taking the life or harming another person, please think about, you're not just harming that other person. If, I mean, there's so many things to think about, but you're devastating the life of so many people. Read the book and at some level be willing to walk away. Understand, in fact, the very first chapter of the book is "We Can Break Up."
Mm.
It talks about just that. We can break up.
Right.
And an understanding of that could go either way is important to alleviate things like this.
Suffering.
All types of suffering at many levels for many different people.
So, Loretta, it's...
Well, the breaking up of... I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say... Yeah, I was going to say to you that the... Like, statistically, I think most women who are the victims of violent crimes experience that at the hand of a significant other, loved one, husband, boyfriend. Okay? So, and then Charles just talked about men taking action based on their, how they feel they're perceived in the public arena, in their community at large. And Carl, I'm not sure how you might want to weigh in on this, but I'm saying, what happens for a man when he gets to that place?
And he's no longer concerned about his appearance in the community, and more so is concerned about harming this person.
Well, not only that, he must somehow see this woman as integrally tied to his identity.
Mm.
In order to kill her, to keep her from leaving him.
Okay, guys.
Well, I mean, the reality of it is in situations like that,
mm-hmm.
And they're really, when you look at, like, psychology and how these things are being viewed, they're very much behind the times of what's actually happening. Usually in a violent crime like that, there's already been a long-standing amount of abuse between the couple that's gone back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that, again, from a sociology standpoint and a psychology standpoint, there's only one type of abuse that's recognized. You know, like, we're still behind the times. We're still looking at women as, you know, they're at the subject to men in terms of abuse, and men have to kind of, you know, withhold some of their desires, and like the guy said earlier, their ego, to prevent physical abuse. But what usually happens is the mental and emotional abuse that's taking place in a relationship, and there's oftentimes physical abuse. And those things are going back and forth between the couple.
You're kind of saying...
What usually happens when you see violent crimes to this nature, whether it's death or major issues, is that it's reached ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is oftentimes a man will he'll be kind of basically out of his mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'll get to that point, and that's why a human being can say, well, I don't really care what happens to my life anymore or my future or the next 60 years of my life, because they've reached a point where, you know, the abuse and the pressure and the stress and, you know, their self-worth, et cetera, have been compromised to the degree where they just could take somebody else's life. And it's not all on
him,
you know, their girlfriend or their spouse. You know, these are usually things that build up over years, mm-hmm. starting in childhood, starting in previous relationships, et cetera, but it usually comes to a head in the one where the violence is actually carried out.
I just was interjecting when you said it's not all on, I said him. And what I believe I'm hearing you say, and what I can surmise to some of it, is that the violence is in many ways a way that they communicate. They actually communicate with each other that way. And it's not just, although he's taken the most devastating step, it's not just simply he that's been participating in the violence. Is that what I hear you saying?
No.
Yeah, basically, in my book, Tenure Women, I describe two types of abuse, two types of domestic violence. You know, I describe what I call the feminine aspect of domestic violence and the masculine. But both can be portrayed by either gender. But what I'm saying is there's abuse going on in the relationship. It's never the case. I've never seen a case personally where there's no abuse going on, and then on day 100, somebody kills their spouse or their girlfriend, or somebody kills their boyfriend or something like that. That never hardly happens. What happens is you have abuse going on back and forth. You also have an inability to understand relationships and how to relate in a relationship with another human being. And those are the contributing factors. This is really more cultural. It's not like, oh, wow, this is strange. Two people broken up or two people are abusing each other in relationships. Most of the abuse that happens in the world happens amongst people who are close together. You know, their husband and wife or their girlfriend and boyfriend or their blood relative. So most of the abuse, most of the molestation, most of the, you know, the sexual dysfunction happens within these close relationships. So it's a cultural phenomenon. It's not strange when you see it. You know, it's just that's American culture. That's Western culture and the inbred dysfunction of how we relate to one another.
I'd just like to comment briefly. I'm also saying that there is a loss of, there is an identification of ownership of the relationship. Oh, and individuals have identified that this is mine, and the overwhelming loss of this item, we're reading more and more now about not only relationships as far as the intimacy of two people, but also the killing of the whole families. In other words, you know, where children are involved, and you know, this indication of this is mine, and I don't want to share them. If I can't have them, nobody can have them. And you know, that concept of being played out in this violence, as far as an elimination of life, the termination of life. You know, that's also a practice or a belief that may come up out of an overwhelming realization that I'm possibly going to lose this, and I'm not going to give it up.
Charles, Charles.
I think. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, go on, yeah. Carl.
So I want to jump in here too, because I work with men who engage in abuse too, right? And one thing that I see this act being is definitely a sign of desperation to maintain a sense of control. All the times when you see guys who are engaged in abusive relationships, right, they want to control something, right? And oftentimes maintaining that control, they feel as if they can control that woman or control the relationship, they can control themselves. So the relationship becomes a direct reflection of who they are, right? Which means if the relationship is absent, they feel as if a piece of themselves goes along with that relationship. So how can you maintain control to keep that relationship? So when I think about, from a psychological perspective, about some of the things that these men are going through, right? First and foremost, when they enter the relationship, there's already a broken, fragile sense of self. It's very delicate, right? So anything that happens in that relationship is going to be measured against how that person feels about himself. So the more he is able to maintain that control, the more he feels good about himself. The more that he's not able to maintain control, the less he feels about himself. And sometimes when you use that relationship as a measuring tool for your self-worth, your identity, and how you feel or see yourself as a man, when it's absent, you have nothing else because you became so dependent on that relationship. And sometimes when you think about men and how they engage with women to go to a certain extent to kill someone, which means when that relationship was done, that automatically was connected to that person, how he feels about himself. And what's difficult for men to deal with are emotional issues, right? It's difficult to see myself as feeling less than, as inadequate, as unimportant, And what we do, like we do in any other type of situation, men in general, I could say this is a part of human nature, right? We try our best to hold on to a sense of worth by any means necessary. And some means are more dangerous, more ridiculous than others. Some means become the drug. Some means become sex. Some means become killing another person, right? It's different ways in which we hold on to that worth. When I think about this situation, I see it as an act of desperation to maintain a sense of self, and a part of that sense of self was that relationship. And when that relationship was gone, that person felt as if he was gone. So he had to eliminate it as quick as possible. And that's oftentimes what happens when I think, when I'm working with these men who are in abusive relationships. It's all about control. And my ego and my dignity is tied to controlling somebody else. The more I control, the more I feel good about myself. The less I control, the less I feel about myself.
So, Charles, what I hear is not just a, well, they go hand in hand, but it's not just a piece around control, but it's also a piece around being inflexible, like an unwilling to unwillingness to be flexible. So would someone pick up the baton and talk a bit about why flexibility is important in a relationship? And we can even tie that into why flexibility is important
period.
In fathers. And period.
Yeah.
Flexibility standpoint, again, going back to what Charles is saying and what's being applied here, in order to be flexible, you have to have self-esteem first. You know, again, from my standpoint, most people enter relationships lacking self-esteem, lacking self-worth. You often hear people say, I want a relationship or I want to get married or something like that before they even know who they're going to get married to or be relationship with. So that's an indication of a lack of self-worth. So the bottom line is, again, from what I've seen from coaching, you know, literally thousands of people, most people enter a relationship paradigm where the self-worth is not there. They're using in some way, shape, or form their partner as a bolster to that void they have within themselves. In terms of fathers, so if you have the self-worth, then you can be flexible. Why? Because I know that I can create the life that I want.
Right.
I know that I can have you know, a wife or a husband. I know that I can get my money together. I know that I'm a valuable person. So I don't walk through the world, you know, with concern or stress or doubt. Those are the people who are able to be flexible.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of fatherhood, it's the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm up working as a man, but my, you know, baby's mother and I are not together, I don't have any concerns about that. Why? Because, you know what, I'll do what I can do. We live in separate states, no big deal. I'll make sure I, you know, drive, you know, 2 weekends a month or 1 week a month to go visit my child. I'll make sure I provide money. And I realize that that is a role that I can play, and that's a very important role. And I'll support my ex in saying, look, make sure you also expose our child to other men in your life. Bring your boyfriend around the child, bring your uncle, bring your grandfather around the child, because I'm not there. So yeah, I can be flexible, you know what I'm saying? Because my self-esteem is not tied up in what society says I'm supposed to do as a man. Because I'm not with, you know, the woman and the child or multiple children doesn't mean that I'm somehow lesser than the man. I think Charles was implying that earlier. So, but if I don't have that self-esteem or self-worth aspect, then I'm going to try to uphold a societal standard that says I'm only a man if I do this, this, and this, and therefore I cannot be flexible.
Loretta?
Flexibility allows someone to grow as an individual. It allows you to open up your options. I don't know if you would have to have self-esteem in place first, but I know that it would introduce self-esteem options for the individual if they do have flexibility, if they see that there is an alternative to even past practices. You know, it does help an individual to grow.
Okay. Clearly, a conversation on self-esteem is a whole other show. Just listening to the two of you, the three of you.
It's possible a conversation about self-esteem is every show.
Yeah. Yeah. Underlying premise, you're right.
Yeah, that's where it all starts.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we're joined by relationship expert life coach, husband, and father of three, Carl Stevens, CEO, father, and founder of Fathers Uplink, Inc., Charles Daniels, and mother and licensed clinical professional counselor, Loretta Elizadel. And we're discussing fatherhood and the issues related to it and the lack of it, as well as we've touched on a few other things so far. Loretta, please tell us what you're up to and how our listeners can find you.
Well, they can find me at my private practice down at 17 Warren Road, Suite 3A in Pikesville, Maryland. That's zip code 21208. My phone number is 410-241-6006. I see individuals, families, couples, and we address issues of adjustment, of grieving and loss, PTSD. That is one type of trauma, and we have many types of traumas. I see children from ages, I guess 9 until forever, however old you are. We address just life skills as an ongoing practice, as evolvement, so that individuals can know that even though they have learned certain things and practiced certain things, they do have an avenue to open up new areas. I think that's what's happened with a lot of individuals, is that lifestyle changes and adjustment becomes very, very challenging.
Nice.
So it's an ongoing learning procedure.
Charles, what are you up to, and how can our listeners find you?
So they can find me in Boston, Massachusetts. Our office is located 100 A and Apple, Warren Street. They also can find us online at www.fathersuplift.org. And our phone number is 617-987-5994. And what we do is we help men stay engaged in their kids' lives. We are not a parenting program, and I tell people that all the time. Our philosophy is if we can help a man learn how to parent himself, he's going to automatically know how to parent his children and be in relationship with others. There's a direct connection between how someone treats themselves and how they treat the people that they're involved with. And we try to help men identify the healthy ways in which they can treat themselves a little bit better and figure out different ways in which they could treat themselves better than those old negative ways, man, like beating themselves up, judging themselves harshly, listening to stereotypical nature thoughts about who they are and their identity, what they should be. We give guys the tools they need to create their own story and write their own ending. And that's our philosophy to the work that we do in Boston, Massachusetts.
And how about you, Carl?
Yeah, people can find information on us at jujumama.com. That's JUJUMAMA.com. We're also based here in Nashville, North Carolina. We have an office downtown. If people want to schedule an appointment to come see us. And you can also go to our training site to find some of the courses that we certify coaches in at jla.jujumama.com.
Carl, you did a blog that I mentioned earlier, and it was entitled Single Mother's Playbook, Raising Sons. And it talked about the importance of a community, and you even noted that you had you used to live in a communal household. Would you talk about that and how you recommend that and why it was important in your development?
Yeah, so when I lived in Washington, D.C., I think that's where we first met, when I lived in D.C.
Indeed.
So I lived in a household with a total of 18 other people. My wife and I and two children, and then our third was born there. And there was also a single mother who lived there with her and her two children. And then there were two other families occupying the house. So, you know, D.C. has those big houses. So we lived in the house together. And what I was able to witness, you know, in terms of my children and the other children who lived there, was how every adult in the house was looked up to and valued by the children. It was just, you know, they felt they could go to any of the adults, ask questions, get support, you know, can you take me down the street? Like, it was just very open in that way. And I also saw all of the children responding and learning from the other adults, you know, and they saw the other parents there as, you know, like aunts or uncles and that type of thing. And so my thing in the Single Mother's Playbook is I really want single moms to understand that just because the father of your child is not there, it doesn't mean anything in regards to how that child can grow up. It's your responsibility as the parent in the house and responsible for the child to expose them to the other adults that can aid them in their growth and development, to expose them to, you know, travel, to expose them to, you know, different environments and different activities, et cetera. But, you know, whether, again, like I said in the beginning of the show, whether you're married or not, or you're, or both parents are there or not, it's still critical that we expose our children to a variety of other adults who can have positive influence on us in their children's lives. And so that's what the Single Mother's Playbook was really all about, was trying to empower women who are raising children, especially boys, to know that, you know what, there's not a death sentence here in terms of, you know, my son not turning out to be a man. No, you expose that boy to other men who you trust, who you have faith in, and they'll turn out just fine. Half of the issue, I'll say this on the floor, I'll let you go. Half of the issue, Frank, is that it's the stigma around family and the nuclear family. You know, if a child grows up believing that, you know, they're somehow strange or different because they don't have a father in the home, for example, you know, because society says that's supposed to be the case, then that's where half of the issue comes in. There's no relationship structure that is better than any other relationship structure. You know, you can be in a polygamous situation, you can be in a monogamous situation, you can be in a single situation and come up as a child, you know, to be completely healthy, psychologically, physically, and be successful as an adult. So we can't buy into the death sentence ideology that, oh, my father's not here, therefore, you know, my son and daughter is going to be a failure. It's not true.
Wow. Awesome.
Any advice for women who repeatedly find themselves unable to get along with a man? And there are women who find themselves in similar situations.
I have some advice. I think positive accolades to the child, not negative reference to whether it's biological or negative reference to perhaps failed dating. Of how males, how they perceive males. I think that I wanted to really commend that the communal living and the village concept, I think, is all very positive. As long as the messages that are being given to that child being reared are going to be positive and they're going to be strength-based, a lot of times they're not. A lot of times they are pointed out some of the elements that this child contains, you know, from the biological father or from the biological father's family, that they are making very negative references. And it's not so much the society at large. Sometimes it's the nuclear family that is giving these messages to these children that they are combating, you know, that I see in therapy sessions, about what they have. You know, that what they're going to develop to or what they're going to develop into because of failed relationships, because that things did not work out. And they carry that with them. So I think that a child, you know, getting strong upbringing messages about themselves, about the society at large, and that they have the capability of surviving and doing well in this world, not negatively about you're going to be just like your father, or you act just like your uncle, or you look just like, you know, it's that those negative references, they go deep, and they stay.
I just want to say,
like some people from combating these ghosts of their family,
Loretta,
and of also of past relationships that, you know, mothers might have been in.
Right. So Loretta, I gotta say, for the record, that growing up, my mother said on a regular basis, "Oh my goodness, you're just like your father." How, and fortunately for me, she meant that in the most endearing of all possible ways. So it really did more to feed my self-esteem than take away from it. But I totally get what you are saying and agree with that position. And certainly if she had meant it in any other way,
you would have known. And it would have affected
question.
You.
And it totally would have affected me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I've been listening to this conversation for a while, and I'm thinking about some of the messages that I've heard growing up. And of course, now that I'm a dad, it's got me thinking about them in a different way, right? Mm-hmm. So one of them is that it takes, you know, a man to teach a boy how to be a man, right? Mm-hmm. And I grew up without my father present in my daily life. Mm-hmm. I saw my father occasionally.
What about men?
Every few years. I'm getting to that.
Okay.
And the men who were just sort of in the community, perhaps as teachers or maybe at church, mm-hmm. but not in a daily life mm-hmm. kind of way of raising me. Mm-hmm. So I knew that as a boy, I had this insecurity that said, oh man, I'm not being raised by my father. That means I'm not learning how to be a man. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now as an adult, and especially as a dad, of course, I value being in my kids' lives. But I've also learned that that's hogwash, right? Mm. I've learned how to be a man even though I wasn't raised by my father.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that that's one of the messages. I'm just really curious about what other people have to say about that. You know, just what kind of messaging we give little boys, even little girls. I mean, the idea that fathers are especially important in a girl's life, right? I hear that a lot of times. And again, I think I have a great and important role in my daughter's lives too.
Sure.
And at the same time, I know that there's some fathers that if they're in their kids' lives, that's bad for those kids. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, it took me being an adult to really turn a lot of those ideas on their head. But it did a number on me as a kid growing up.
Mm-hmm. You know, I actually think that that conversation, I think the conversation around it takes a man to raise a boy, I think it's a worthy concept to give thought to and to play with. But I think it's a conversation that adults should be having with each other.
Oh yeah.
Not with a child. Because like you said, it could, I mean, if a child hears that, they're going to think they're less than. By definition, if their dad isn't around, or mm-hmm. you know, if it's mm-hmm. if it's mom on the other side,
mm-hmm.
I also wonder: do you, instead of completely dismissing the concept, do you find that there were some things that you think you would have gotten if you would have had a man closer to you and when you were growing up? So, do you completely dismiss the concept, or do you know that you can be all right, even if
transcend
a
this yeah, you circumstance. Can.
Right, right. Is there some value there?
So I see value in men, women, but really what I see value in is love, right? Mm. So to me, if you can raise a child in loving, teaching them self-acceptance, showing them self-acceptance, mm-hmm. modeling positive, upright, pro-social behaviors, mm-hmm. to me, that's what's important. And so you teach, you know, you can teach boys how to be a man in your way of being a man. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you're teaching them how to accept himself, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that there's all kinds of stuff we talk about, but we don't always talk about what does it mean to raise a child to love himself or herself? And how do you teach this person to become a, you know, a loving adult who does good in the world, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, you know, there's value to me, especially if you're teaching love. Mm-hmm. Right. So a man just being male.
Right. That's
not enough.
Right, right, right.
That's how I see it.
Mm-hmm. I think the kicker in what you're saying is you use the word modeling. And a lot of times we say things to our kids, but we don't exactly model mm-hmm. those teachings. You know, the old do as I say, not as I do thing.
What is that?
That the kids mm-hmm. are doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if you're not modeling self-acceptance, if you're not modeling self-love, if you're not modeling those things that are consistent with self-esteem, then you're going to get the byproduct of that in your children, mm-hmm. I feel.
Does anyone else want to weigh in on that before I ask my child support question?
Hello?
Yes, Charles.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. So I'm gonna jump in real quick. I haven't really said anything about this particular topic, but I do know that for me, when I think about men in the world, right, I think I get tired of seeing older men between the ages of 30 and 60 coming into my office, right, crying because they always long for a father. They wanted to know who their father were, right? And for me, that's sad. I do believe that sometimes, man, when you are a child, you do have that longing. If your father isn't present, if your mother isn't present, you want to know where you come from.
Yes.
Right? You want to be connected to the person who helped you get on this earth. Yes, some of the people around you, like my mother, she was good at creating a community for me, the deacons in the churches, the deaconesses in the churches, right? The mentorship program, the pastors in the churches, right? Different summer programs where I have a chance to be around different men in the community to help kind of guide me and teach me how to tie a tie or to wear a suit or to use a belt or to put my shoes on and how to make my socks match with my shoes, right? But there's something inherited in us as human beings that we want to know where we come from. We want to know what's a part of our history. Mm-hmm. We want to be connected to that. We want to feel as if we are a part of something that's engravedly connected to us. And I think sometimes I definitely don't want to dismiss how important it is for one to know their origin and to know the people who contribute to their creation. And I think at the end of the day, I mean, it would be a disservice for me not to acknowledge, even though my father wasn't in my life, right? I always have to acknowledge that it was a blessing to know where he was. It was also a blessing to know why he wasn't there as I grew older. And it goes back to the other question, what are some things that mothers can do to help raise children, right? When I think about in the South, there's a lot of secrets that destroy families, right? And oftentimes those secrets deter one from actually getting to know who their siblings are. They find out they have brothers when they get older. They find out they have sisters when they get older. They find out the truth in the matter, right? We have to understand that those secrets will eventually come to light. And how we communicate those secrets to our children, how we engage with them around those secrets, will play a major role in their creation and how they grow up in the world. So for me, I would like to add another token to this conversation that we have to address those hidden secrets that dismantle our family slowly, particularly in the Black community. We have to address those secrets, and I don't have a specific way on how to do that, but we have to be honest, we have to be truthful, and we have to acknowledge where we made mistakes.
Well,
and that's another piece to Ashley. What can mothers do, or what can single fathers do to help rear their children a little bit better? Creating that community is a good thing, right? But kids want to know their origin, and they also want to know where they come from. If they don't know that, it would be a disservice to them.
Right.
Part of addressing that is that it's not just the South,
it's universal,
yeah. And it's not just when I hear you say the South, and given the composition of the conversation we're having right now, it's not just the African American community either. And
right,
so
right,
it's
right.
It's big. It's bigger than the South. It's in the North, Midwest, West, and it's way outside of this country also.
It's human.
It's very human.
It is. And only reason why I say the South and African American community, because I can only speak where I come from.
Sure.
Right? But I'm pretty sure that it happens in different other cultures as well. I just know factually how I was reared. It definitely happened in that area.
Oh, it's rock solid up here in D.C. Ain't nobody talking about nothing up here. Donald Trump is a cover for family secrets in this town.
Some.
I'm getting in trouble. Go ahead.
I would like to say that also, as we talk about the rearing of our families, and I just want to piggyback on the love component. I think it's really important that we do not only promote love by our presence of that, so that they not only have a guesswork, they don't have that, they can eliminate the guess factor, but also resiliency. Our children are lacking the ability to bounce back. They are lacking the ability to adjust in to challenges. And I think that just having that support and just supporting them on an ongoing basis, again, through positive messages, through positive examples, It's very, very helpful. Believe me.
Some shows ago, and I'm talking about 15 shows or so ago, I went around the room with my co-host and even with Jeff, who's the engineer, and I asked whether they believed, everyone here believed, that forced child support was a good thing, whether it should happen. And I was mind blown that no one said that they thought it was good, that they thought it was that it was a good thing or that it should happen. I'm curious about you guys. Let's bring you into the conversation. So let's start with you, Loretta. Is forced child support a good thing? Should it happen?
I think a person needs to be financially responsible for bringing up their children, but I think that the punitive process that they have in place, and it's more of a punitive process, you know, that it's either all or nothing. There is no gray area. I've been in and out of that process, and it's really very punitive. It's also a process that puts a stamp on the child, a value on the child, how much this child is worth. Is it like a negotiating factor? And I think it eliminates the humanness of what we're talking about here, what we're bringing to the plate here. It's, we're talking about a financial support, you know, to help, but to shelter the child, not another income that I can add, or there's no involvement. You know, there's no forced involvement. There's no, you know, well, I'm going to get you checked, but I'm not going to have you become involved in this person's life because I'm angry with you,
mm-hmm.
or I'm annoyed with you, or you've moved on. You mm-hmm. know, so it doesn't, the two does not go together as far as building a relationship,
mm-hmm.
because both parents are both very much, the dollar sign is very much presented out there to them. The receiver of the dollar sign,
mm-hmm.
and the giver of the dollar sign. That's what they're looking at. They're not looking at the child in question, you know?
Carl?
And I think it eliminates the humanness of the child that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Carl, what do you have?
Yeah, I just, you know, I don't look at child support as good or bad, to be honest. You know, it is what it is.
Okay.
The issue is always, you know, what adults choose to do. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like a gun. Is a gun good or bad? Well, if somebody's breaking into my house and they're about to kill my child, then having a gun there is great. But no, going into a grocery store and robbing with a gun is negative. It's not the gun. It's not child. There's nothing wrong with child support in theory.
Mm-hmm.
I've coached a lot of couples who use child support, you know, in a really good way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, it makes things easier, it's systematic, it's a beautiful, you know, it's beautiful.
Well, the question was about forced child support. Is there a difference?
You know, forced child, again, it's the same thing. I mean,
okay.
There are cases where forced child support is appropriate. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's cases where there are fathers out there, there are mothers out there who have financial capacity to support their children, you know, financially, who are refusing to do so because of a disagreement with the other parent,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so in those instances, forced child support is a beautiful thing. Man, bring it down, bring the hammer down. In other cases, like Loretta was saying, it's abused.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know how human nature is. The people who are looking for dollars and say, this is an opportunity for me to make money, to not work, or to do whatever. The child is completely and totally compromised in that process, and therefore it's bad. So again, we can't look at it as, for me, I don't look at forced child support as good or bad. You know what I'm saying? I look at human beings, and I look at the culture that we've created in this country and say, why would somebody go towards forced child support and use it in an abusive manner? The same way somebody would use marriage in an abusive manner. Well, the person's here, therefore I don't have to take care of myself anymore, I don't have to have sex anymore, or, you know, it's optional, I can abuse my partner. People just tend to leverage what's at their disposal. You know, because of a lack of personal empowerment. So do I think forced child support is a bad thing? No, I don't.
But yeah, it's something that could potentially be abused, and it's commonly abused.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Charles?
Forced child support. And when I think about forced child support, and I'm only going to speak about it in Massachusetts, but I think about how forced child support, how it takes advantage of different parents. And I feel as if when child support is forced, the state is essentially saying, hey, I'm going to step in and going to make sure that this parent gets the necessary resources that they need. But oftentimes when it comes to the money and the parent getting the check, in Massachusetts, the majority of that money doesn't go to the parent, right? It actually goes to whether or not they're going to be on MassHealth. You know, we have statewide health insurance, food stamps, things of that nature. They don't get a good portion of that money. So when I think about forced child support, I think it's mainly filling the pockets of the state that's enforcing it. Right, we make a lot of money off of child support in the state of Massachusetts, to be honest with you. And when I think about guys who have been forced to pay child support and they end up going to jail, the state doesn't stop the child support because they're in jail. Their arrearages, their fees continue to increase. And when they come out of jail, right, they have a bunch of debt they have to pay off. And if their licenses are taken, and their licenses are oftentimes taken away from them, they can't go outside of the country, right? How are they gonna get in a form of employment to pay the money back if they don't have a license, right? How can they work? See, so different things like that. They already come out to a situation where it's going to make it difficult for them to pay the child support back. And again, if they can't pay the child support back and they can't work, they're going to go to alternative ways. So I feel as if we're just digging a deeper hole, right, where people who are forced to pay child support, they're going to be stuck in debt for a good portion of their lives. And oftentimes, it's going to result in the relationship between them and their family being permanently broken. So for me, I'm not sure if I condone forced child support. I think there has to be another way to hold that parent accountable without stripping away everything that he has. Yeah, we all make mistakes. Yeah, sometimes we make poorer decisions than other people, but there has to be another way. And I just don't think forced child support is the way.
Rehan, what do you have?
I'm still thinking about this one. I don't like the idea of doing the forced child support approach as a first option.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if a parent is just choosing not to take care of their child and the child is being neglected, like they have important needs that are not being met as a result, then I think forced child support may actually be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I see it as a last resort. Mm-hmm. And that's my current thought on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been joined by relationship expert, life coach, husband, and father of three, Carl Stevens, the CEO of Fathers Uplink, Inc., Charles Daniels, and mother and licensed clinical professional counselor, Loretta Elizabeth. We're discussing fatherhood and the issues related to it and the lack of it. So one more time, guys. Loretta, please, quickly, would you tell us how we can find you?
Oh, you can find me at private practice I have in Pikesville, Maryland. And that's at 17 Warren Road, Suite 3A. And it's by appointment only. And I see individuals, families, couples. I see teenagers, adolescents. So there's no barrier there. Mental health and substance use disorder.
Your phone
that's
number?
What I specialize in.
Your phone number?
410-241-6006.
Charles?
Phone number 617-987-5994. You can find it at www.fathersuplift.org. The website should give you all the information you need to get in contact with me.
And Carl?
Yes, you can go to jujumama.com. That's JUJUMAMA.com. And if, again, if you're in the Asheville, North Carolina area, you can come to our downtown, 82 Patton Avenue, Suite 213.
Along today's journey, we've discussed confidence, community, and we rounded it out with a conversation about forced child support. Thank you to my guest, co-host Rehan. Thank you to my co-host Nancy. Thanks to Jeff Newman, my engineer. And thank you to my guests, Loretta Elizadeh, Charles Daniels, and Carl Stevens. Thank you for hanging out with your Frank Relationship team today. You guys have been great. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had hanging out with today's all-star ensemble. And as always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr. That's M-R Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, make sure you like us there. And if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love. We'll be right back.